Hey, what's up, guys? That's right, Nerd Soul here. Get ready for the podcast, breaking down what happened in your week of geek. Doesn't matter if it's movies, comic books, TV shows, we're going to get right into it. So I ain't going to waste your time. Let's do this. All kinds of cool stuff is popping off, but got to give a little love to Scrooge McDuck. In the new Disney XD series for DuckTales. They've rebooted it, they've brought it back. You got Huey, Dewey, and Louie. You've got Uncle Donald. You got Scrooge McDuck. And it seems like it's going to be a blast. And I love the animation style. I love how they're giving you a bit of the new flavor and sprinkling in the old school as well. Of course, in this new episode, it's completely free to watch on YouTube. You can check it on the link below. And you find that, of course, once again, Huey, Dewey, and Louie are just, they're running amok. They're giving Donald too much of a hassle. It's just too much. These three boys done lost their mind. And Donald's just like, look, I need to get away. I gotta go to this job interview. Look, I just need to send them to my Uncle Scrooge's for a minute. And even though he's trying to kind of push his kids off on, you know, his Uncle Scrooge so that he can get this job interview, Scrooge is in a place where he's like, yo, man, I think I still got it. I think I still got a little spunk in me. I think I might be able to go on new missions. You know, find this lost city of Atlantis. I think I can go deep sea diving and find me a city all for myself. You know, find the jewel of Atlantis, if you will. But, of course, you can't do that all alone, because when you pick up Huey, Dewey, and Louie, they gotta tag along. And as Huey, Dewey, and Louie go along in this, you know, in this kind of babysitter, forcible enactment for Uncle Scrooge, or Scrooge McDuck, of course, they kind of get into some stuff. You know, you find them in the garage, they're looking through like old, different legendary materials, like old treasure boxes and old paintings and haunted gear and all kinds of stuff. And they're doing nothing but causing calamity everywhere until, you know, of course, Huey and Dewey and Louie have to kind of sort of apologize to Scrooge as he solves the problem for them. Even problems that are a little bit larger than your garage can handle, like a huge dragon. Now, before we get to the dragon, let me remind you that you can find me on Black Hollywood Live. That's right. First online network for African Americans. It is super dope. And you can check them out on blackhollywoodlive.com, where they have celebrity interviews, after show, sports talk, geek, nerd, tech, the whole shebangabang at youtube.com/blackhollywoodlive. So let's talk about this dragon for a second. It was dormant, minding its own business, until three little bad-headed boys banged a gong three times. And of course, now we have a problem on our hands. And when I say problem, I mean a huge dragon flying all around, breaking stuff because it wants to protect gold. And the person who got the most gold is your boy Scrooge McDuck. And now Scrooge has to jump into action. They got to get the Medusa glove, all kinds of cool stuff. They're flying, you got McQuack flying them around. It's a pretty cool action sequence. And it's fun to see that Scrooge is like, yo, I still got it. You know, I might actually want to take these kids on a mission with me. But what would Duckburg be? What would Scrooge McDuck be without someone who's, you know, a little bit of a rival? And that's where we get Glomgold, man. He comes in, he hires Uncle Donald, and we know why he got hired, man. He's trying to get the inside track. And we can't let something like that happen. We gotta make sure he gets booted out. But while our humble nephews are with their great uncle, looking for the city of Atlantis, it seems that they're gonna follow him and just kind of try to swipe it from under them. But, you know, there's a couple hiccups along the way, because you have things like booby traps. How does he do it? I don't know. And so much more that they have to deal with that you have to keep these kids safe from. And during this mission, we find out that, hey, you know, look,
These boys are a handful, but I like having them around. They're great to me. They help me feel the vitality. They help me know that I still got it. I love sharing some of the game with them, and they can teach me and I can teach them and we can have fun. And Scrooge McDuck, you know, he lightens up a little bit. Even at the end when Glomgo, you know, gets what he gets because that's what he deserves, we find out that, hey, maybe it's best that we just all live together. Or maybe it's because Donald Duck's house blew up. Either way, it's, you know, it's fine no matter what you do, because you learn that lying is responsibility, and you learn that sometimes the jewel of Atlantis is not what's down, but what's up. So, guys, holla at me, I'm gonna holla at you. Down in them comments, let me know what you thought about the new episode of DuckTales. It's back, I'm enjoying it. I don't really like the fact that it's kind of written like a sitcom. It's the current, you know, today's current style of comedy doesn't really, I guess, fit it like DuckTales should be, I guess. But I'm not against it. It just kind of, every now and then, some of the jokes are just like, this feels like somebody wrote it for like a live action television show for like a Friends ripoff. But hey guys, I still enjoyed it. The animation was fun. The kids are always cute. They're bad, but they're cute. And I love going on a new mission every episode. And who can hate on Scrooge McDuck? I mean, the dude has so much money, he can swim in it. Oh yeah, we get into another wonderful episode of On Screen. And it is so dope, I ain't gonna waste your time. So Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe. It's coming our way fast and furious. So much so that we're getting brand new small tidbits of trailers to lead up to the official trailer where we finally get to see Ninjak holding it down against the likes of Bloodshot, Livewire, and many more. Now, if you are, like I am, you've read a couple of Valiant titles, maybe Shadow Man, maybe Bloodshot, maybe 4001, some Rye stuff, whatever it is, but Valiant has been putting it down for a minute. And on top of their kind of like push into live action here with Bat in the Sun and a lot of their digital content with Valiant Digital, they're also doing a whole lot of content that they have in development with Sony for the big screen. So right now on the small screen, we got the likes of like Jason David Frank playing Bloodshot and all of the different characters in the background, in the foreground, also speaking straight to us and letting us know what's happening behind the scenes and just helping us get a little pumped up, because in just a couple of days, on the 28th of August, we're gonna get a official trailer. So all of these small shots, all this cool stuff is gonna come right to us. So my question is, are you ready yet? Are you psyched? Ninjak is a pretty decent character. I've seen him, you know, drawn very well. I've seen him, you know, written very well. And of course, when it comes to Bloodshot, you guys know that he's one of my rising stars as far as characters that I like. And Shadow Man, who probably won't be on there, but I love Shadow Man. And Livewire, I'm so excited to see Livewire. So guys, holla at me, I'm holla at you. Down in them comments, let me know what you think about the whole kind of like layout that Valiant Digital is doing for Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe. Are you feeling it? Are you not feeling it? Who are you expecting him to fight? So guys, holler at me because I got to know who he gonna beat down, or maybe not beat down. So next up is some of that brand new with DDX. That's right, Department of Disclosure, brought to us by Brandon Easton. It is super sick, and it's nice and small, short for you, right on Vimeo with the link below for your sci-fi and UFO enjoyment. Now, a really quick rundown of what you're gonna expect to see is a lot of intercut footage with, like, you know, news clippings, people getting interviewed about the phenomena of course, UFOs. And we're gonna get the vision through the eyes of a Lieutenant, I believe, Will Bennett, and kind of this very important file that he's holding on to and what he might need to do with it. Maybe he needs to get rid of it, maybe he needs to destroy it, or maybe he needs to share it with the world, but we will only find out shortly in DDX. Now, straight up, I'm loving the vibe of like, kind of like the sort of like documentary vibe of the short. You get these interviews from like military folks, people on the street, of kind of what's out there, what they expect, what aliens would be like, would they be dangerous, would they not? And they intercut it with Will Bennett's, you know, journey. And without giving away too much, it's very interesting to see how they run the line between what's real, what's not, and maybe what's been hidden. Now, before I go any further, let me remind you that you can find me on Black Hollywood Live. That's right, the first online network for African Americans. Super dope, and you can check them out on blackhollywoodlive.com, where you have, of course, celebrity interviews, after shows, sports talk, geek, nerd, tech, the whole shebang, and live streams every day at youtube.com/blackhollywoodlive. So with new mysteries like the gyroscope, Will Bennett being an enemy of the state, you know, UFOs being real or not, this cut footage, the statement from Reagan at the beginning, I'm very, very psyched. I'm on board, and I'm definitely in to see what comes out of DDX. What's next for Department of Disclosure? So guys, holler at me, I'm gonna holler at you. Down in them comments, go see the video. It's only like 10 minutes long. Chop it up, come back here. Let me know what you think about it. Let me know if you are feeling Department of Disclosure. It's fresh to see what we get these days with just original content. So if you like original stuff, if you like sci-fi, if you like UFOs, go see DDX. And next up is more casting news for, that's right, DC's Teen Titans. If you didn't know, Teen Titans or Titans is gonna be coming to DC streaming service along with Young Justice, the new Outsiders joint. So it's gonna be very, very dope to have that service. We're gonna see how they price it. We're not sure yet, but we have some casting news. And that is that Anna Diop, I hope I'm not messing up your name, has now been cast as Starfire. That's right, the beautiful princess that ends up on Earth, decides to stay here and work with the Titans. And man, oh man, is she powerful. I mean, the girl can fly, the girl can shoot laser beams, she got super strength. I mean, there is not much that she can't do. And with the casting of Raven already on lock, I'm very hyped to see how this goes. I mean, who's gonna play Cyborg? Who's gonna play Robin or Nightwing? Who's gonna play? You know, I'm very interested to see where these next casting moments or casting decisions go, because they're picking some dope folks. You know what I'm saying? They're picking some decent folks. So guys, holler at me, I'm gonna holler at you. Down in the comments, I wanna know who you think they should cast for, say, Cyborg. Maybe who should they cast for Arsenal? Who should they cast for maybe Brainiac? Or, well, she's not called Brainiac in this. But you know, who should they cast for, say, Nightwing? You know, let me know what you're thinking. I've got a couple of people in mind, but I'll save that for another video. But right now, guys, let me know what you think and who you think should be in Titans, because show's gonna be on point. I'm down now with Raven and Starfire casted. Those girls, they on point. They good with me. Talk shop, that's right. We're gonna be here with some comics, continuing our lovely read along of Ghostbusters. And straight up, I ain't gonna waste your time. Dan Schoening is back. I finally got through all the issues to where they finally brought on Dan Schoening. I love this art. The art style is there. I am excited. Now the art is there. And I'm pretty sure you're probably wondering, well, is the writing there? Because I don't think Eric Burnham wrote this issue. But the writer of this issue, if it's not Eric Burnham, definitely got the team just right. I mean, before we even get into it, the characterization is so on point about, especially when it comes to Egon and how he acts with Peter, how Peter is back and forth with Janine all the time. There is just so much just beauty there as far as the feel of Ghostbusters. And not to say that books like The Other Side or any Tainted Love, any of the other ones were bad books, but they weren't hitting the mark. And this one is where we finally back at hitting the mark. So, of course, we're chilling on, you know, of course, what in the Samhain happened. Halloween is upon us. You got a nice gala coming. You got Mr. Lester planning a wonderful night. And he's just like, hey, look, what's going on? This ain't scary enough. It's not spooky enough. Well, when you ask for spooky, sometimes you get spooky. And a ghost just appears straight out of a speaker box. And this is what he deserves, man. Because Mr. Lester is one of these like reality producer guys. He's real slimy, treats people like trash. Like he's dirty in every deal he handles. I mean, I wouldn't be mad if somebody was haunting him. But that's neither here nor there. The ghost needs to be taken care of. And of course, he heads straight down to the headquarters of the Ghostbusters, looking for the most professional help that he can get with a haunting. Now, of course, the guys aren't feeling him. Ray doesn't like him. Egon, sure enough, don't like him. But Peter's like, hey, we two peas in a pod. Especially when he offers them $50,000. Let me say that again. $50,000 just to bust one ghost. I mean, do you know how many ghosts they've been busting for, like, I don't know, $10? I don't know how much they charge. They don't charge a lot, though. Like, $5,000, I think, is what they charged in the first movie. So it's a far cry from what they used to get. Now, unfortunately for Mr. Lester, they ain't feeling him, so they kick his butt straight out. But, you know, Janine, who's been going back and forth with Peter about her pay and maybe a pay increase, she ain't gonna turn down that $50,000. And this turns out to be a very important and shining moment to Janine and her character's kind of growth through the whole Ghostbusters lore, because not only does she accept the $50,000 to go out and bust the ghost by herself, but yes, that's not only it. She goes there and ends up finding out that this ghost is not extremely angry, but the ghost is just trapped. The ghost ended up dying there, couldn't get out, wasn't able to, you know, let his spirit be released, if you can say that. And Janine she just levels with him. She's like, look, I know who you are. You know, maybe you're just feeling bad. Maybe I can do something to help you cross over. And the ghost, not like with, you know, Winston was a little more forceful. Janine used honey to get those flies. Now, before we talk about too much honey, let me remind you that you can find me at Black Hollywood Live. That's right, first online network for African Americans. Extremely dope. And you can check out all their blog posts and videos at blackhollywoodlive.com. They got celebrity interviews, after shows, sports talk, geek, nerd, tech, the whole shebanger bang at youtube.com/blackhollywoodlive. So I know you're probably wondering, how in the world did Janine get there? How in the world did she even get hold of a proton pack? Well, at this time, Winston took a little trip. He's on vacation, just relaxing. So Janine said, hey, ain't nobody using this proton pack. Might as well use it myself. And when she uses it, not only does she throw on the pack, I guess she didn't have the coveralls or overalls on in her size. This homegirl shows up in like the J-Lo outfit for ghostbusting. But that's neither here nor there. Janine got to do what she got to do. She's an empowered woman. So she's down there. She's fighting the ghost. She's trying to talk some sense into the ghost. She finds out that, hey, this ghost maybe might not be that evil. And while she's trying to talk to the ghost, we see the guys doing their research, finding out that Samuel Hayne was Mr. Lester's business partner. And Mr. Lester was mad dirty. And so dirty that after Sam Hayne died, he didn't even look for the body. He was just like, whatever. Pretty much wrote down that he was dead and took the man's house. Now, of course, the Ghostbusters show up, help out Janine, and in helping out Janine, they end up, you know, taking care of the ghostly situation, which I'll leave up to you guys, because, I mean, I know you guys are reading along, and some of you might have to catch up. But what I'll say about this issue is that it's good to get the creative team back. I'm excited about it. Just the fact that we have the art back where I enjoy that. I'll just say that, you know, because it's not that the other art, it just didn't fit the story. And I think Dan Schoening's art is perfect for Ghostbusters. And it's stories like this, along with art like that, that makes the Ghostbusters comic book work for me. So I have to definitely, with all I got, of course, that's right, tell you to check out this issue, What in Sam Hayne Just Happened, because it's definitely worth the read. You'll love the art, you'll love the comedy, Egon and Peter, and Peter and Janine are just, they're at top form. Very, very top form. Just, it's super funny. You'll definitely get some giggles out of it. And it's a quick read. So guys, holler at me. I'm gonna holler at you. Down in them comments, let me know what you thought of what in Samhain just happened, because it's pretty funny. That's right, movie reviews. I'm not gonna waste your time. We've all had a chance to see it. Hopefully, if not, you're probably checking it out today. Maybe, but we're gonna be talking about Death Note, the movie on Netflix that is adapting the manga and anime of the same name. It's been adapted to film before over in Japan for like 5 or 6 movies already. And now Hollywood, or sort of Hollywood because it's Netflix, is taking its crack at it. So my first impressions are that this movie is pretty okay. It's not bad, it picks up for me. And I enjoyed a lot of the film towards the end of it. It has a slow start, but it definitely built for me. So one of the huge things that I really loved about this was Willem Dafoe's voice as Ryuk. I know that a lot of people kind of, they were on the fence about Willem Dafoe's voice. I thought it was great for the character. I think he really brought a very eerie, creepy vibe to it, which really lent a lot of like quality and just, I guess, gravitas, shouts to John Rocha, to the film. Like when you hear him speak, when he laughs, like all of that weird, creepy stuff like this, are things that really make the film for me. Another thing that makes the film for me is when you get past the kind of slow beginning, because in the beginning, you know, you see the book drop very quick. The whole opening sequence is like almost all slow-mo. You know, the book drops, he finds the book, and you know, he gets sent to detention. But once we get the entry of Ryuk and like just the mystical part of the Death Note, that's when the movie starts to kind of start to travel for us and start to pick up some steam. And I love the kind of the detective vibe that it presents, because that was something that I was wondering if we were gonna get enough of. And I'm not sure, well, I'll speak a little bit later towards the difference between the other film and this film, but I think that they presented it pretty well with how L comes in, how he kind of makes sure he hides himself and all of that good stuff. I also really like that they didn't shy away from the gore. Like they made sure that you saw these deaths and that there was blood everywhere. And it wasn't that kind of like 300 kind of like Kool-Aid-y blood, but it was just, I don't know, blood. But I mean, not real blood. Nobody got hurt in this. It was like, you know, corn syrup or something. But what I'm saying is that the blood looked real and the deaths looked kind of gruesome. And I was wondering if they were gonna shy away from these things or not. Even with the first death, like Kenny, or when, I guess when Light kind of wanted to test his theory again against the man who had hit his mother and, you know, kind of like wrecked his and his father's life, when he, you know, pretty much killed that dude, it was not good. Now, before we get to some mo good, let me remind you that you can find me at Black Hollywood Live. That's right, the first online network for African Americans, extremely dope. And you can check them out at blackhollywoodlive.com, where they have celebrity interviews, after shows, sports talk, geek nerd tech, the whole shebang, with live streams from day to day on youtube.com/blackhollywoodlive. So since the character that, or the actor that played Light was not, he didn't really hit it for me, but someone who did was the young brother, that's right, Keith Stanfield that played L. He really brought, with between Willem Dafoe's character and, or between Willem Dafoe's voice and Keith Stanfield playing, you know, L in a very, very particular, quirky, but very directed fashion. It brought, like I said, some more quality to it. Especially a very interesting scene where we see them twice kind of face off. There's one where Light is in the, you know, the cafe and he's kind of by himself and L comes up and they have their little kind of like standoff verbally. I think that's a very strong point in the film. Another one is when he comes into his house and just straight up accuses him in front of his father, who is also a solid character actor. Kind of, it brings some gravity to the film. And it's things like that, and also things like, Like, real talking about, you know, people have tried to write my name in the book before, and my name has four letters. And the first they've ever got is two. It's moments like that that make the movie shine. I also think the production quality helps the movie to shine. But of course, there are some things like Mia, who I think kind of, it's weird. Mia is good, and then she's also problematic as a character, or the way they portray her character. Because it seems like he, you know, Light gets trusting way too fast for Mia. And maybe it's because they kind of condensed this into one film, where in the Japanese version, I believe they had two films where they kind of stretched this out, where they were able to build it a little bit more. And this, they kind of just condensed it into one. And it just seems like dude was just, he wanted some so bad. He just straight told her, just without any equivocations, like, yo, I'm the dude that's doing this. And I don't know if it's because the stuff is that good or if he wanted the stuff that much, but I felt that he was way too trusting, at least for my taste, especially with a Death Note. You know what I'm saying? So that's my issue with Mia. I feel like as a character, she was kind of weak, at least too weak to be telling her so much so soon. And then at the end, where you kind of get this situation where she fully turns, where you can kind of see she always wanted the book for herself, but they didn't, I don't feel like they gave me enough to kind of sprinkle it in. It's almost like she went from, after they were like having sex and everything, she immediately turned to like, yo, you cool and everything, but I just want the book. And during all that time, Light is like, yo, I gave you power. But anyway, shout out to Nas. But what I'm saying is, you know, she didn't even really, of course, want him. It was the power that the book brought. And of course, it goes back to the whole God demon thing that Rook is. It's kind of like, is he a friend? Is he a pet? Because there was a warning in the margin saying like, look, he is not your friend. He is not your pet. He is dangerous, blah, blah, blah. And I would have loved to read the rest of that because I'm sure other people wrote about him in that book. But it just ends up putting her in a place where she becomes very predictable, of course, towards the end. Now, all in all, I'm pretty sure you guys want to know how I feel this racks up to the other films. And I'm going to say that. But first, I got to say with, you know, with the acting, with the atmosphere they provide, the way it's directed, and some pretty strong performances from Willem Dafoe and Keith Stanfield, I had to put this right at 3.5 stars. Is it a solid entry? Yeah, just about. It's worth checking out. I love the death scenes. I love Keith Stanfield in it. I love the way they portrayed Rook, and I loved his voice. Also, I did like when it went towards the detective angle. I loved how Watati was brought into the film, how he was, of course, taken out of the film. And I love how they kind of spun it as far as the rage inside of L when Watati was taken. So I do love those parts, but there are things like the beginning where this movie does take a while to get going. But I do think it's worth you checking out. If you're into Death Note, if you've liked the manga or the anime, I think you could get something out of this. It's a nice little adaption. It definitely takes a spin on a couple of things, but I do think this may have worked better stretching out over two films, like this kind of particular story, I guess, this plot line did in the Japanese versions. Now, which one do I prefer? Since the Japanese versions are much, or the first two that I've seen, are much older than this film, as far as production value, I'd say I prefer this film. The way they handle the relationships, I prefer the Japanese version. But I'm gonna leave it up to you guys. Guys, holler at me, I'm gonna holler at you. Down in the comments, I want you to check out the live action film for Death Note, at least the first two. Check out those and then check out this film and come in these comments. Let me know what you think. Do you think the Japanese kind of storyline, the way they spread it out a little bit more, did more for the story? Or do you like the truncated version that we got here? We got a little more news about Netflix and the acquisition of Millar World. So we got something from The Hollywood Reporter saying that, hey, there's a little bit more that we've learned. And we're going to break it down here. Like, one, unfortunately, there's a couple of titles that Netflix just ain't going to be able to use. Like Kingsman, like Wanted, which we already knew about. Kick-Ass, which we already knew about. But also Starlight, Chrononauts, Kindergarten Heroes, Superior, stuff like that, they're not going to have access to, which kind of busted up my top five reasons or top five movies or top five properties that Millar World should make in Netflix. So let's talk about what we do get. In this case, this seems to be, of course, the first company that is being acquired by Netflix straight up just for content. The news is coming out that it was about $30 to $50 million, which is a huge payday for a lot of the creators that were under Millar World and just the properties that they represented. Also, a nice tidbit of information came from Todd McFarlane when he says, you know, they could either do something like go to 10 different people and ask for 10 different ideas, or they could buy a clump of ideas, which seems to be what they did with Mark Millar. So with the information of the titles that they won't get, the things that they don't own because they've been previously sold off, but they spent all this money, and they only have a limited amount of products or properties from Millar World, what now? Well, the article seems to suggest that the important part is they get what comes next. And what they really got, what they really purchased, what they really gained is the mind of Mark Millar. They've gotten the essence, the style, the foresight, the kind of storytelling vibe that he gets as a consultant to these new projects, that he provides as kind of the atmosphere and tone that he puts in all of these very interesting and interconnected worlds that he produces. I mean, the guy is grinding so much that he even said himself that he's kind of going into the creative bunker from now until spring to kind of bring out brand new properties, brand new titles that, of course, Netflix is going to be able to shine with through their streaming service. So before we get into possible properties, let me remind you that you can find me at Black Hollywood Live. That's right, first online network for African Americans is so dope. And you can find them at blackhollywoodlive.com, where they have celebrity interviews, after shows, sports talk, geek, nerd, tech, and all that at youtube.com/blackhollywoodlive. So the meat of this seems to be a very interesting statement about the projects that already exist that they could take, advantage of, if you will. Like Reborn. And Reborn, of course, if you remember, I was talking about before, it talks about sometimes in the afterlife, things ain't over and the war rages on. Or MPH, which is a little maybe closer to home, with a whole bunch of teens running around Detroit and the things that they get into. And I love the art style of MPH. It's very unique. And I'm very interested to see how they play that off on screen. Like, will they kind of bend the light, play with the light, maybe play with the sets, or maybe how it's color graded, if they decide to use MPH. And of course, one that they call Jupiter's Legacy, which looks like the article is kind of pushing us to believe could end up being a cinematic universe on its own. Now, what does this mean? Does this mean that maybe just a cinematic universe just on streaming? Because we know that Netflix is also pushing into theaters to a certain degree as far as like limited runs, you know, special events. Could this be something where Netflix starts to push a little more towards the theater with some more limited runs, like say, hey, it releases on Friday, so between Friday and say the next Wednesday, we'll have this movie in theaters, something like that, because this is giving them the power to push back against maybe the loss of the titles that Disney is taking away when the end of their contract finishes. So all in all, we're gonna keep up with this because I'm very, very psyched about new properties, about, I guess you could say, more competition. We have Disney, of course, with Marvel. We have Warner Brothers, of course, with DC. They're doing their thing. And you have, of course, Sony with the Valiant universe, which is in development now, but there are some things like with Harbinger, with Bloodshot, and even with Shadow Man, now with their director, Reggie Hudlin, kind of pushing forward. So this is gonna give us more variety, more diversity, and more competition. And we know that, of course, competition, of course, sharpens that sword. So that means that the more competition, the more varied stories that we get, the better we'll be for comic book and graphic novel adaptions. And that's what's so important to me about this particular kind of merger or acquisition, I guess you could say, is because this is going to help the genre survive. Because, of course, Avengers can't do it alone. Justice League can't do it alone. We need more broader kind of storylines, broader content to be able to save and preserve this genre as long as it can go. We don't want this to end up being like Westerns. So we need things like, you know, like Avengers, but we also need things like The Walking Dead, even though I don't watch it anymore, but that's a whole nother thing. We need things like The Walking Dead, or we need things like, you know, Cloak and Dagger. We need things like Justice League, but then we also need things like maybe like Reborn or Kingsman or any myriad of different options and titles and properties that we get coming. So guys, holla at me. I'm gonna holla at you down in the comments. Let me know what you thought about this article. I'm very optimistic about what's gonna happen with this particular story, with this particular acquisition, what we're gonna get going forward. We've seen what Netflix can do with comic properties already, so I am psyched. So guys, before I bounce, I gotta tell you to hit up thatnerdsoul.com. That's right, check me out right there. All the videos from the oldest, newest, latest, greatest, and all that. Then hit up shop.thatnerdsoul.com and pick yourself up a t-shirt player. And don't forget to get one of for them playettes. Then come back here, like, comment, subscribe, and share that Nerd Soul. That's right, there's no better way that I can show people that you like what you are watching. And of course, LA, what up? VA, what up? RBA, you got my heart. So please be good to yourselves and be good to each other. And guys, don't forget, Mark Millar is no joke. We're in for a treat. Peace.